Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This podcast is a Royfield Brown production. Find others on iTunes.
All right. Yeah, I know.
Now, I need you all for a project. James Jeffries, a friend of Robert's, is sponsoring Dumpty Dum. He is very nearly as clever as Robert and... actually, slightly more creative. He builds prototypes for the web and does some amazing things with data for arts and culture. In fact, I may ask him to work on the Village website if I can loosen Jennifer's grip on the thing. He's worked with all the best people, you know. The BBC Research and Development team, creating interactive story explorers for Homefront and Peaky Blinders, for the London Philharmonic Orchestra, creating a prototype of a searchable archive of their historic performances. Once, he even built some tweeting receipt printers for a Bill Drummond exhibition. Now, that's the kind of innovation we need for the Village show. So if you'd like to talk to him about your project idea, you could get in touch with him at Robert, what's his email address? James@shedcode.co.uk. That's James@shedcode.co.uk. Or you could have a browse of his website, shedcode.co.uk. Do tell him I was looking for him if you see him, won't you? I want him to design me a digital resurgam stone.
This is Dumpty Dum, the show about the reality docudrama that centred on Ambridge in the heart of the Midlands. I'm the complicated deal that is Royfield Brown, and with me are the gigantic debt that is...
Lucy Freeman.
And the last part of our home farm land grab, folks, is you. Now, this week's Dumpty Dum comes to you from M. Johnson's loins. Well, it's the fruit of her loins anyway. It's a little Dumpty Diddler who manfully... all childfully tried to get through doing Barwick Green. I kind of like the kind of jazz improvisation on the melody. Not quite sticking to it, but very valiant effort. Well done. Well done. And guess what, Luce?
What?
We have a shed load of Dumpty Dums. Well,
oh, goody.
Three.
That's a small shed.
Well, yeah, compared to what the amount we normally have. Yeah, so we're going to... unveil them.
It's a 300% increase on the amount we normally have.
Well,
so there we go.
Like a 1 million percent increase, because it's like normally we get zero.
That's what I mean. So we have a 300%.
All right. Okay. Right. Now, Luce.
Yes.
If somebody would like to add to our burgeoning pile of Dumpty Dums, how can they do that?
If you would like to sing us a Dumpty Dum, leave us a plot prediction, or pimp out your sister-in-law to get a better deal from the man who employs your niece's rapist husband, then ring us on 02030313105 or leave us a message on Speakpipe. Thanks to Cosmo for his podcast roundups and to Derek for the load of the back bedroom. Derek has been very busy this week. He was inspired by Danny Dyer discovering that he has royal connections on Who Do You Think You Are? So Derek investigated his family tree and surprisingly has discovered that he's actually related to Lord Netherbourne through a distant cousin. Apparently the Netherbournes were famed for their enormous balls, so there is a family resemblance.
I just like Netherborn's balls. I just thought that was excellent. Well done, you. Well done.
Thank you very much.
Right. On this week's episode, we have calls from Jan from Cannes, who's ain't trusting Justin. Steve, who's had it with Jill. Neve, who wants to talk to Toby. Auntie Jean, who's team Jill. Witherspoon, who's had a wink from Kerry. And New York Nigel, he's back, who feels sorry for Rob's neighbours. But first, before the quarter in us, before we have some side chat about something random that comes into our mind, and before Lucy gets the geography of North Wales slightly wrong, according to Cosmo, it's Lucy V. Freeman's Week in Ambridge.
We started the week with Adam and Ian's anniversary. Jenny, darling, warned him against making a fuss. First year anniversary. What's that? Is it wood? Coal? No? Oh, yes. Infidelity. It's not like I'm whisking him off, says Adam. I mean, that sounds painful, but appropriate, I suppose, what with him being a chef. There was lots of damn it, Charles, at Home Farm about buying lots of land for BL. Brian was saying things like opportunity of a lifetime, affordable in the current climate, blah, blah, which is everything David was saying about Handy Hock before that all went tits up. Brian did the old switcheroo and went from Adam stuck going on about soil, who cares, you big gay hippie, to Adam, no one knows much as much about soil as you. I didn't understand the loan, but he said this is our opportunity to guarantee the future of Home Farm, which means it's going to be a massive plonking disaster. Mark my words, Jenny, darling, will soon be asking the food bank at Borchester where they keep their porcini, and she'll have to get a part-time job cleaning for Susan. Tee-hee. Matthew's history, Mom, said Pip, which makes Toby double biology, sadly. Lillian is right out of sausage. Well, that is what happens when your boyfriend goes back to his wife. She has come clean to the family about her herbal lay arrangement with Justin. What about Miranda? Asked Brian. Oh, she's fine, said Jenny, darling. She just put on a funny voice, fell over a cleaning bucket and pulled a wry face to camera. So, Alistair is going into partnership with Anisha and Jill is going into partnership with the loony bin, by the sound of it. She is now chuntering on endlessly about Toby. And although she is still hooting, she now sounds like an owl that swallowed an elastic band. Poor old Ruth got stuck in the middle of a row between a petulant teenager and a petulant octogenarian, and no one came out of it sounding entirely normal. For some reason, at the pantomime rehearsal, Linda is putting on her spiritual voice, which makes her sound like Mystic Meg, that strange woman with the wobbly intonation that used to read out the lottery results. Please, Tom, just read the lines and your motivation will become clear, said Linda. He did, and it didn't. She didn't pack it in, even when Toby hit her over the head with a juggling club. Rex and Toby had a not very joyful reunion. Rex blamed Toby for the fact that Rex was on his own looking after the geese, even though it was Rex that had fired Toby. Apparently, Toby dislikes his mother. Really? A pain in the ass man whose problem is his mother in Ambridge? Surely not. And she has a boyfriend called Hans. I very much hope his surname is Knees und Bumpsa Daisy. Mike got a mention, which was always nice. He's not dead, he's in Birmingham, said Roy. Same thing, isn't it? Tom, Roy and Jazza, the saddest and most romantically incompetent men in Ambridge, have decided to join forces so they can be incompetent together. The dream team, the three musketeers, said Jazza. Athos, Porthos and Nicholas Witchell. Roy asked Rex if he also fancied reliving the 90s, but bearing in mind Rex is a good decade younger than Roy, he'd have relived the 90s by doing his homework and eating fish fingers. They went to a club night called Ghost in the Machine, managed by a man called Dickie. Dickie? Sounds like he should be wearing a striped blazer and doing the cricket scores. Incidentally, as a manager of a hotel, you would think Roy would know how to pronounce Prosecco. Prosecco, as opposed to amateur secco, presumably. Adam went to Home Farm where he had lamb tagine and a massive row. Jenny Darling's like a hugely incompetent Kofi Annan as she repeatedly sets up rows by saying, now you're not going to row, are you? Definitely. Promise. Whatever you do, don't row. And don't talk about the thing I don't want you to talk about that's going to make you row. You know that really contentious thing. Oh, look, darling, now you're rowing. There was a German market at Lower Loxley. Maybe they should have invited Hans, Knees and Bumpsa Daisy. You know the sort of thing. Plastic snow, hurdy-gurdy music, the smell of burning bratwurst and Titcomb dressed up as the Weimar Republic. Richard tried to tempt Elizabeth to have a mouthful of his Wiener Schnitzel, and she said no thanks, as every time she got near it, a vision of Schuler waving her hunting crop about loomed up, and she shot off to go and skate round her own personal ice skating rink and think about how terribly busy she is. The end.
Oh, I really enjoyed that this week. Oh, crumbs.
You're not allowed to say that anymore, are you?
Yes, no.
Yeah.
No. Gosh. Now, what's my catchphrase going to be then?
No, you better tell people why you're not allowed to say it anymore.
Because I think...
You're upsetting Jane Roth.
But I think she's slightly got the wrong end of the stick. I'm not being snotty by saying it was quite good this week. Because if I say it's quite good this week and I say that every week, it's because it's always awesome. Isn't it?
I don't know. Is that what you mean? I don't know what you mean. Well, I never know what
I think
mean.
The irony is, if I say it every week, well, then people can put together a really what I'm really saying. But anyway, thank you for your email. But I love Lucy's monologues. I wish I could do them, but I can't. That's why she does them. They're awesome. Anyway, but we'll come on to the meat and potatoes of your email later. Now, Lucy V. Freeman.
Yep.
Can you remind me what happened last week in the Archers? Other than what you know, your kind of comic aside, what else kind of you know?
Well, I have some questions. Ooh. About last week.
All right, good.
First question: why didn't Lillian tell Justin it was Rob that had told her family?
No idea.
Because I just can't see why she wouldn't.
Don't make no sense to me.
No.
Next question.
This was about your thing, which is rapidly get your theory that you posited that Justin is like the sort of the Fagin and he goes around trying to look good while he makes everyone else look, you know, do all his dirty work for him.
Yeah.
And in the play,
mm-hmm.
Justin, in the panto, Justin's line was, I'm not going to do the rhyme, but it was something like, he has his henchmen that collect the rent, da, da, da. And I thought, that's
there
what
you go.
Said.
There yeah. you go. Mm-hmm.
Yep. Yeah.
Next question.
I don't understand how when David told Ruth and Thing to get out, they haven't gone.
Toby. Well,
that was just. But was it conditional on getting rid of the still?
Yeah, that's the way that I read it. He said, "I want that still out of here right now."
And if it's still there. Ha ha. Still. If,
well, it's in Grundy's field, isn't it, really? But anyway, go on.
But if it's all sealed up, as he said, how is he actually going to make this gin?
I don't know. Right.
There's a lot of storylines at the minute, aren't there? Mm. They're kind of like near misses.
Well,
they kind of look like they're going to turn into something interesting, and then at the last minute they veer off into a pile of dog poo.
No. I think I slightly disagree with you, because I think the whole Toby and Pip thing is interesting, because this is the first kind of wedge I can remember in the Brooker's Archer's family in quite some time.
Are you joking? You
know. No, take Kenton out of it, but I mean...
No, the whole Handy Hock thing.
Oh,
the old
that's true. But what I mean is... Right, and you're good to get me to clarify, is in terms of, yes, Ruth wanted to go and David was going along with it kind of reluctantly, but we've actually had, proper Barneys, haven't we? We've had, and we don't have that with the Brooker's Archers. We don't.
No.
We don't. Right.
Well, it's because the person who's the peacemaker is now the antagonist.
Absolutely.
And she seems to be slightly obsessing, doesn't she?
Slightly.
She keeps dragging.
The woman's bat so nuts so off her tits on this one. And don't get me wrong, Toby's an arse, right? But
sure,
come on.
I'm not sure you can talk about Jill's tits. It's making you feel a bit uncomfortable.
I'm sorry. But, you know. But
like saying you fancy the Queen or something.
Oh,
don't tell me
you
do.
No, but back in the day.
Yes, I know. You've already said. Oh, yes.
She
yes,
was a looker,
yes.
The Queen.
Yes.
Proper looker.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right, pull your trousers back up and let's carry on.
Stop it. My trousers are firmly up around my nipples, Simon Cowell style. but no, so we actually have, you know, vocal kind of conflict and discord, and I love it. So I disagree with you when you say that, you know, the stories are kind of going nowhere and they are near misses. We're getting Jill obsessing, going over the top. We're getting Ruth saying, mother-in-law, come on now, calm down, right? We got David slightly going off on one as well. And then we got Pip, who is obviously now got doubts about Toby. But she feels, but yeah, but she feels that she has to defend the guy.
Yeah,
I think this is all good. And then we had a bit of Faithless. I can't get no sleep.
Oh, yes.
I'm telling you, my hands were in the air, Lucy. I was like, having it. The 1990s all over again. Oh yeah, I was there. But other than that, I kind of do know where you're coming from in terms of it feels a little bit bitty. But we've just had this overwhelming storyline for so long. So the fact that it's actually gone back to normal, we're still kind of getting used to it, aren't we? In terms of there's a little bit of a storyline here, there's a little bit of a family taking their pictures over there, etc., etc.
What do you think was the reason Henry had a meltdown about dressing up as a gosling? I think Rob's told him that it's girly to dress up.
Well, that would be a likely scenario. But also, I suppose it's just, we're supposed to think that here is this, you know, he's had Rob as his carer and he's gone into this, you know, he's just missing Rob, and just whenever he feels a little bit unsettled, it's kind of amplified by the fact that his domestic situation has changed, you know.
Yeah.
But you know, maybe I'm not so sure.
Is that it?
I think so. I think so. We've done Faithless, Fat Boy Slim, and I can't bring out my anecdote about Fat Boy Slim warming up for me as a DJ before, you know. I've said that too.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Many times on this show.
We have 3 maps to give away from the lovely people at marvellousmaps.com. To get your hands on a map, you need to answer this fiendishly difficult question set by James Jeffries of shedcode.co.uk. 3 boys have been taught by Mrs. Jeffries at Loxley Barrett Primary School. Can you name 2 of the 3 boys? So 3 boys have been taught by Mrs. Jeffries at Loxley Barrett Primary School. Can you name 2 of those 3 boys? You can answer by going on dumptydum.com and hitting contact us. Good luck.
So I think it's time to have the caller in, or is it?
Hello, Ambridge 3962.
Who's first, Lucy?
Jan from Cam.
Ooh, Auntie Jan, love you.
Hello, Dumpty Dum. It's Jan from Can calling. I was just listening to Dumpty Dum and all the questions about why Lillian would cave in so quickly about the scarf. And I kind of suspect that Lillian was very shaken up about the departure of a tiger, especially at her age, because I think maybe being in her 70s, it's a bit scary to think about spending her older age alone. And I'm just guessing that maybe she didn't feel confident that Justin would have her back because of the way he, you know, offered Rob the job so quickly. Which, by the way, Royfield, I thought assessment of why Justin gave Rob the job in the first place was really bang on. I don't trust Justin as far as I can throw him. Anyway, that's just my thoughts on Lillian and Rob.
Yeah, she is sympathetic to Lillian, but I still don't get it really. Jan, I understand what you're saying about that Lillian is sort of shaken up by the departure of Matt and that she didn't feel confident that Justin would have her back if she told him about it, that it was Rob that had kind of identified the affair. But I don't, it just doesn't ring right to me. It's,
no,
you know,
doesn't.
Lillian loathes Rob, and she, because of what's happened, she wasn't that keen on him before. And I think she would take any opportunity of saying to Justin, look, this is the kind of idiot you've employed. He's not only harmful to your reputation locally, he's not only, you know, physically harmed my relatives, he's actually harming our relationship.
And also, just to back up what you're saying there, the week when he got the job and Justin actually said to her he was thinking of giving it to him, she did say, no, you shouldn't do this.
Yeah.
They have actually had this conversation.
Yeah.
So the fact that now the person who's raped her niece and then being at best indiscreet with the fact that they're bonking, you'd think she'd turn around and say, this is the type of man that you employ.
Yeah,
it would have no effect on Justin. That's what he wants. But however, she's not to know that, so she should say that though.
Yeah. It's just very, very strange that she would hide that. Just peculiar. And I do understand what you're saying, Jan, but I just don't, it still doesn't sit right with me. It just doesn't work. Mm. Steve from Poole. Bye bye, Steve.
Hello, Dumpty Dum, it's Steve here from Poole. I hope you're okay. Jill is getting on my wick. I think she's getting on Ruth's wick as well. Obviously, she's getting on Pip's wick. She wouldn't get on David's wick because David thinks the sun shines out of her arse. But she really is being horrible and vile at the moment. If I was Ruth, I'd send her in a bloody writing desk back to Lower Loxley. Another person, Roy, I'd say bless him, but I just find him such an unsympathetic character. He's gifted in two ways. Not only is he tedious, but he's thick. Can you imagine going out with him? It must be like watching paint dry. He's just so devoid of any merit whatsoever. Why would anyone want to go out with him? Anyway, that's me. 55, 57, 58, 59, 60 seconds. There you go. Now I can do a lot of bye-byes. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Love you. Bye-bye. Mwah. Bye-bye, bye-bye, bye-bye. Love you. Bye. You go first. No, you go first. Bye-bye, bye-bye.
Jill needs to be sent back to Lower Loxley with her writing desk. That makes me... Because Auntie Jean says that she's Team Jill, that she thinks Jill's completely right. Regardless of, yes, I think we've all agreed that Toby is bad news. The man is a fool.
Mm.
And Pip, irritating as she is, can certainly do better. But it's the way Jill is doing it if she wanted to push them further together, she couldn't be doing a better job. Because everything she's saying is forcing Pip to come out in defense of Toby and therefore kind of cement their relationship, because every time she says it, the more she says, no, he's going to make a real success of this. No, he's fine. No, he tries really hard. The more she says it, the more she's actually believing it. And if she was just left on her own, she'd probably come to the conclusion that he was a Burke and just wave him goodbye, you know, and it would all be over nice and quietly. But this way, it's going to be like they're going to be married by Christmas if Jill carries on like this. It's that, you know, you just think, what are you doing? And she just seems to have lost her edit function. Where Carol Toboggan is in all this, I don't know, because Carol Toboggan's usually quite good at going, shut up, Jill, effectively.
Well, she went abroad skiing with her daughter, didn't she?
Are they still at it?
Yeah, they have been gone for quite some time. She should be back by now.
Maybe they're in an avalanche or something. Mm. And yet, Steve, I have no idea why anyone would want to go out with Roy. It would be like it's...
No, he's solid and dependable.
No, but you know...
No one's ever wanted to go out, you know, with me for those reasons, admittedly, right? But, you know...
You're not solid or dependable, is that what you mean?
Exactly.
Weak, flighty and
yeah, exactly.
Weak, vacillating and flighty. That's right. A well-known firm of solicitors. Weak, vacillating and flighty. Do you don't like dogs, do you? You don't like animals much.
What are you talking about?
I thought you didn't like animals much.
What are you talking about?
Okay, I can't really say it any other way. Do you like animals or not?
Well, I thought I've answered that, really, haven't I? I'm saying, what are you talking about? Of course
I do.
I didn't have pets growing up. That's where you've kind of mutated that fact into saying that I don't like animals.
Okay. But sometimes you meet old dogs. Right, I am going somewhere sensible with this. I haven't just had a stroke or something. Old animals that are a little bit smelly and a bit drooly, and they've usually got ear infections or something horrible, and they're just a bit, you know, or a bit
spitty.
That's
Roy. Is that what you said? That's Roy.
And they're incredibly appealing because they make you feel sorry for them. And then you stroke them and then you think, no, I feel sorry.
So you're trying to say if a woman sleeps with Roy, it's a pity shag. Is that what you're saying? Yeah. I disagree.
Because when he must have been attractive. God knows. Something must have happened with Elizabeth. Because he was all, I'm doing this festival and it's all going really brilliantly, and he felt really
confident. But that's because you saw somebody who was very capable, and it was a man who was around her and also good with her eldest, etc., etc.
And also, it was just Roy was a completely
proximity.
Different person then.
Well,
he was doing this. Oh, where have I gone wrong? Oh, it's all, I might as well just lay down in this ditch and die, which is what he's doing at the minute. Women, you know, it's not attractive. No woman is going to look at you and think, oh, yes, you are a bit of a smelly old dog with a manky tooth and an ear infection. But, you know.
Roy, I completely disagree with this construct here. I don't think Roy is a smelly old dog. I think he's boring. I'll give you that.
No, I don't think he is. I think he thinks he is. He seems to just be trying to attract women by making them feel sorry for
him. But he's not trying to attract women that way, is he? It's just he feels totally out of sorts in this modern dating world. And I think that's a fair feeling to have, especially if you've, you know, he hasn't had to date for the last, 15, 18 years, however long he's been with Hayley. And then all of a sudden you've gone from, you bump into somebody down the bull, to you're swiping left and swiping right. It's a whole different world with a whole different set of mores and stuff. And what he's saying to people is, I don't really know what to do. And you have to learn again actually how to converse with somebody who you don't know, which is a neat trick actually to have. You know, Roy Tucker has always been incredibly capable and confident work-wise, hence he was the manager of this and the deputy manager of that and then yada 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 blah blah blah. So you could completely see how somebody like Elizabeth, well, it's still a stretch to say somebody like Elizabeth would find him attractive, but you could completely see how somebody in a work scenario would find somebody like that attractive, because he's capable, he gets things done, he's got his spreadsheet, and actually things get nailed and get done. However, we're talking about affairs of the heart. This is completely different, Juicy Loose.
Yeah. I don't know. I just...
However, he is dull. You know. He is bloody dull. All right, you'd much rather actually want to be on a date with Tom or Jazza. At least they've got a little bit of something about
them.
Whoa,
not Tom. Back up there.
No, you would. Tom's more interesting. Now he's not obsessing about his sausage.
No, but now Tom... he's obsessing about Nuffield. He's got a Nuffield tie. Oh, somebody's texted me off my Nuffield course. It's hard. You think, I miss the good old days of ready meals. And then he'll come back and then all we'll hear is baby food for the next 5 years.
Which will be quite apt, really.
Oh, yes, because she's still pregnant, having not clocked the fact that she hasn't had a period for, what are we now?
Oh, shut up. Shut up.
I know it. I know. I know she's pregnant.
She's going to get pregnant at some point. I know it. Come on, Tom, pull your pecker out. Get her up, Duff.
Oh, dear. Anyway, where are we? Neve now.
Hi, I'm Neve. I am a first-time caller winner. I'm Buckbeak Baby on the Twitters. I've been listening for a while, but this is my first time, as I said, to call in. So I need to do all of the usual stuff. I work doing admin for an organisation in the theatre industry. I've been listening to The Archers for a few years. I had to read back over the summaries to see what character I am, because I'm a Johnny, or Rich, as he was known first, but I remember Pat and Tony finding out that he existed and trying to make contact and all of that. The reason I'm calling in is to add to the sort of Toby Rob comparisons that have been happening and the discussion about whether or not Toby has shades of Rob in him. And I think there are some things that are just, I don't think they're done with malicious or controlling intent as they are with Rob, but definitely for selfish, sort of his own reasons. Yeah, the Archer family don't approve, but post Flapjack Gate and pre David Still explosion, Pip would mention something to do with the family, that she'd go speak to her mum or speak to her dad. Toby would be like, oh, but they don't like me. Oh, yeah, no, but they don't like me, you know that. And they don't like me. And the same with Stirrup Sunday and that sort of thing. And it's that sort of guilt, I think, that he was sort of using against Pip when she was considering going to these people, like going to like speak to her family. And I think it was definitely not helping the situation. And things have escalated quite a lot since then. And the Archers are handling it just really bad, all of them, particularly Jill. They're pushing her more and more towards him. And there was one or two things that he said that just really raised my hackles, I think, a little bit. It was reminiscent of early Helen and Rob. And I am definitely over the 2-minute limit, but I did spend a minute answering all of Royfield's questions, so I hope you'll forgive me.
Neve, I agree. It is probably better to be a Rich than a Johnny. Yes. Try and avoid being a Johnny at all costs.
Oh, welcome to the team.
Yes, and welcome. Mm. Yes, absolutely. I think I've just repeated what Neve said in the other call. I think Neve thinks that Toby is more conniving than I sort of gave him reverse credit for. That he's using the Archer's dislike of him to pull Pip towards him. And her family are pushing her away, apart from Ruth, who's trying to do her best, back to him. So either way, she's heading straight into him. And it's just a disaster. And it's some, you know, there's got to be some reconciliation soon, I think. And I think that might be a Christmassy thing, which will probably result in Pip and Jill making friends again. Because they did used to have a good relationship. But it's got to happen sort of fairly dramatically, because it's just getting worse, and Pip's getting sort of actually quite desperate now.
I don't think she can't be able
to contain herself.
Am I to understand that our Niamh has basically said that Toby's deliberately kind of stoking this?
Yes.
Oh, that's completely not the truth. And it's kind of a little bit like what...
She said not like Rob would actually deliberately stoke it, but he's using stuff that he says, your family don't like me. There's no point me asking them because your family don't like me, to kind of... Because it makes Pip then reassure him that she will sort everything out and it will all be okay, blah, blah, blah. So it's not as directly Machiavellian.
I don't think Toby has got very many faults. Machiavellian type tendencies are definitely not one of them, because ultimately Toby wants and expects everyone just to like him. And therein lies his kind of downfall, that he doesn't put in the work, and also he doesn't kind of understand instinctively when people don't like him, because he just thinks, well, you know, I don't have a bad side to me, I'm just a good sort, blah blah blah, let's just have fun. So kind of slightly nuanced answer. I'd slightly kind of disagree, but yeah, that doesn't mean that he's a good guy at all, and that he's right for Pip. You know, he isn't, but in terms of his motivation and actually how he reads the situation, No, I don't think he would be, you know, kind of doing that per se.
Auntie Jean now. Jean, Gina, let
yourself go. Hello, Dumpty Dummers, Auntie Jean here. I'm finally caught up with the Archies. I've been a bit behind recently. I just want to say that I am entirely on Jill's side in all of this. I think she's quite right to point out to Pip Toby's shortcomings, and there, let's face it, are many of them. Want to give odds on Kirsty and Tom being married by Easter, or at least having run away to get married or something. I'm still thinking that Kirsty might be pregnant anyway. Getting a tiny bit fed up with the Roy storyline, but hey-ho, it gets Jazza in there, so that's fine. And finally... What the bleeding hell was Nathan Booth doing with his ping pong balls? I mean, if it involved any of his bodily sphincters, I will not be listening again. Well, that's pretty much all, really. We need a doctor, really, don't we, to explain exactly what Nathan Booth was doing. Anyway, I'll speak to you all soon. Bye!
Just before you launch into a thorough analysis of her call and then, you know, tell her where she's gone wrong or where she's been spot on the money, this appeal... this petition, sorry, so that her hubby can have this specific drug, which the NHS, in their wisdom, said that they couldn't fund. Basically, the NHS have reversed the decision. So thank you for everybody
who
went onto the link and actually signed Auntie Jean's petition. But it won't be brought up in Parliament now, because the NHS says they are going to find the funds for the drug. So Uncle Jean... can get the treatment that he so deserves.
Yay! Oh, how lovely. I didn't know that. That's excellent.
No, she sent me a little email. She said, Royfield, can you please thank everybody and say that we've had a little victory?
Yay! Oh, goodness. That's very good news, and hopefully it will bring a happy new year.
Absolutely.
Oh, good. Good, good, good.
Answer.
Yes, sorry, I got distracted because I've just realised I haven't done Tweets of the Week. So I'm basically trying to do them at the same time. Kirsty and Tom married by Easter. That's what she says. Or run away by Easter. What do you reckon?
There's going to be some tension around Nuffield. If Tom's going away... She's either going to declare undying love before he goes, so he says, oh my God, Kirsty, I don't want to go, blah, blah, blah. Or when he comes back, she'll say, oh my goodness, I've missed you. He'll say, I've missed you too, etc., etc. All right, whatever happens between them pair, Nuffield is absolutely key to it, because that is just random and out of nowhere as far as I'm concerned.
you've always had a thing about about Nuffield, haven't you? You've always thought that was the, that was what put the idea of Kirsty's pregnancy in your head.
For a start off, it is baby food, and that's Helen's department. And we've only just had him back from Canada.
Right.
So why is he going away again? So it's a plot device of some sort. It's either going to act as some accelerant in terms of his relationship with Kirsty, or some kind of tension break in the fact that things are built up, then he has to go away. There is that, it's there as a plot device. You know, that is absolute fact. And as we've said before, Tom and Kirsty, it's their third time of reckoning, and it's going to happen. And, you know, we say, oh, it's not a soap and whatever, but it is a kind of, I'm going to call it a Den and Angie thing, and that's wildly wrong. It's a bit like Ken Barlow and Deirdre in that they always get back together, you know, and that's what's happening with this pair. It doesn't matter what you throw in the way of them, their love will out. Their love will just see them back together.
Oh, God. Really?
Absolutely. I'm not saying they're going to live happily ever after. I'm not saying that at all. But we know there's unfinished business. And that's what the old celebratory shag after Helen got off the murder rap was all about. You know, they turned to each other, didn't they?
Yes.
Unfinished business.
Uh-oh. Oh, okay. All right. Uh-oh. That means it's going to happen at Christmas, doesn't it?
I don't know when it's going to happen. All I know is that them pair, mark my words, you know, there is another chapter or two to be had in that book.
Okay. Okay, hang on. Da, da, da.
You're doing the tweets, aren't you?
Yep. Multitasking. There we go. Done, done, done. Right. Next, we have Witherspoon.
Hey, baby, I hear the blues are calling. Toss salads and scrambled eggs. Mercy.
Greetings, Lucy, Royfield, Millie Bell, and all Dumpty Dummers around the world. Witherspoon and Angus Haggis here. We're resting up from the first of many holiday parties, yesterday's tree trimming event at Norwood Club. And we're also having a laugh at the very funny advent calendar photos our own Yoko Bear has been posting on Facebook. I do urge you to visit his page. As a segue, did you know that Christmas pantos are not a thing in America? So I live vicariously through the Ambridge Spectacular. I, for one, look forward to the traditional event each year. Thus, the recent comparisons of Linda to Rob are uncalled for. Yes, Linda can be a bit self-centered. Okay, a lot self-centered. But that's where the comparisons end. She is a woman of strong opinions, and she does believe hers are the correct ones, but her heart is in the right place. She has always cared about and extended a helping hand to others. Thus, I draw the comparison to Emma. No, not Emma Grundy, but Jane Austen's creation. Think about it. You could see Emma Woodhouse Knightley growing up to being a kind of Linda Snell. And in that vein, I don't think that Linda putting Kirsty and Tom together in the romantic leads was just an unfortunate decision on her part. I do think that Linda has a plan for the two of them. Speaking of plans, I have also come to realize that Lillian was not just acting out of character and not standing up to Rob, but she also must have a plan, as Tony had suggested to her. It was almost a throwaway line which hasn't been followed up on since, so it must be revisited. There will be a confluence between the panto storyline and the real-life Archer storyline. See, I've returned to my love of pantos. Besides, Uncle Kerry gave me a kind of wink-wink when I suggested this on the Twitters. If so, we're in for a very interesting Christmas week in Ambridge. I, for one, am looking forward to it. Talk to you soon.
Witherspoon, when you say I, for one, look forward to the panto every year, you mean I, the only one, look forward to the panto every year. We all hate it.
Be fair, Lucy, I think there's a bit of a middle course to be taken here. I don't know. I can't quite say that we all hate it, though you, in your very comic but also very observant way, have pointed out the absurdity of the fact that it is the fundamentally the same storyline every year. You know, will they do it? Will Linda pull it off? Linda gets stressed. Robert consults her, etc., etc.
Yeah.
However, I quite like it as well. However, I just wish that it didn't happen quite every year. Biannually would do me, every other year. You know. But it does give Linda something to do in the village, because she's, you know, if there is no bypass or somebody's threatening to chop down a tree, etc., Linda Snell's got nothing to do, has she? So
no,
she can't be a busybody in the village. Then it's the Christmas party. Because actually now she's booted out of the annual fair thing. You know, that's now Fallon's domain. So what else is she going to do?
I think Witherspoon, when he says about when Emma Woodhouse grew up, she'd grow up to be Linda Snell. And she does have that kind of that in a sense she is manipulating. She is aware that there is a thing between Kirsty and Tom, and she's kind of she is engineering that slightly, because she's doing her special syrupy voice, isn't she? She's doing her little, well, if you just go and do and read this, Tom, and look into our eyes and la 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 la. And, you know, you can.
That was a very good impression.
Yeah.
Who needs Harriet with you around?
We do. We really need Harriet. But she has got that. You can. Linda is so transparent. When she's got a plan, she's like Baldur, you know, I've got a cunning plan, that only she thinks that she's, you know, she's so subtle and it's sodding obvious to everybody. But yes, well, maybe her plan will work, and Kirsty and Tom, as you said, is sort of a bit of a foregone conclusion, so I'm sure it will. But yeah, I mean, if she didn't have, the thing is, Christmas is the same every year pretty much for everybody, mostly, if you have the same sort of traditions and the same sort of thing, and you go to the same houses and da-da-da-da-da, so it's all going to be, it is all the same. So I suppose it's fairly normal that we'd have an Ambridge Christmas that sort of has traditional elements to it, and, you know, there's a sort of a consistency there. But he is as disturbed as I am at Lillian acting so oddly out of character when she's not telling Justin about Rob and all that. She just sounds a bit wrong at the minute, Lillian. I don't like it. Unless she is saving up for some huge kind of, declaration. If she's planning to sort of reveal Rob in all his true colours somehow, that would be good. I would forgive that then.
Well,
York Nigel.
Well, just before we go on to New York, Nigel, you know what I was thinking about just then? I talked about Christmas. How do you reckon that Ian and Adam are going to spend their Christmas? Because that, if there is one storyline which is also perplexing me, it's that, really. In that they're kind of getting on, but Ian is very clearly saying, whoa, 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 Tiger, let's slow this down.
Yeah.
Slow the heck down. And I don't quite he's been hurt, I suppose that is the answer, it's the reason why, but it feels very odd, because nothing that Adam is suggesting is sounding particularly over the top.
No,
let's spend a little bit of time together, come round for dinner, you know, etc.
He could come round for dinner, that wasn't the problem. It was when he said go away for the weekend for their anniversary. And that's when Adam went, no, 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 no. I mean, that's when Ian went, no, 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 no. But I think sometimes when people are sort of reconciled, there's that horrible expectation. You know, more people have rows on Valentine. I've just started working with a barrister. And she said that more people file for divorce just after Christmas and just after their summer holiday than at any other time. And I said, what causes that, and she said, I think it's the power of the level of expectation. It's like we always say about the fun fascists on New Year's Eve. It's New Year's Eve, of course it's fun, you've got to have fun, you know. And it's, you know, it's Valentine's Day, so therefore you've got to feel special. If you don't feel special, it's not worth it, leave him, you know, and all that rubbish. So people kind of have this really high expectation that their summer holiday is going to be lovely, and that they are going to feel loved, and that on Valentine's Day they've, you know, it's got to be special, and if it isn't, then that, you know, Christmas has got to be magical, and if not, it's terrible. And there's that whole thing about when you've reconciled with somebody, as Ian and Adam have, then, you know, you go away for the anniversary and it's got to be romantic. And if your feelings about the other person are still a little bit ambiguous, it's horrendously uncomfortable. Because you're thinking, oh God, is it, you know, they're we've got to hold hands, haven't we? We've got to hold hands now, and then we've got to go and have candles at dinner and talk, and we, you know, we can't just be stupid. We have to go and talk properly and all that, you know. And it's an absolute killer. So I could completely see why Ian's going, no, 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 just give me a minute, sort of thing.
Mm. All right.
Sounds to me like you're speaking from bitter experience.
I'm not. Apart from the happiness expectation thing, which I think is a very real thing, and I won't bore everybody. I've got a real strong beliefs, theories around a lot of what goes wrong in. A lot of what's wrong with life today, Roy Field, I tell you, is...
What's that then?
It's the people...
It's the fact that we live in a post-fact society. That's a problem with the world today. No one believes in post-fact. No one believes in anything anymore, does they?
I think people believe they have a right to be happy.
That I completely and utterly do agree with. Mm.
And they forget to be happy with what they've got. They think they can only be happy with what they want. And I think it's a huge, huge, huge issue.
I couldn't agree with you more, sweetheart. And I tell you what as well, being content, massively maligned phrase. Nothing wrong with being content, folks.
That's what we said about Helen last week, wasn't it? Good enough.
Goodness. Yeah. I tell you what's lovely about this podcast. You get the Archers and you get homespun philosophy and ways to live.
It's like Prairie Home Companion.
Absolutely. with a little bit of Buddhism thrown in too.
Yep.
Awesome. Awesome. And a little bit of NLP.
Yeah.
And a bit of football. I tell you what, Lucy V. Freeman. I'm really sorry to say this, but Wimbledon and Curzon Ashton yesterday, what a game of football. What a game of football. And folks, I'm going to be very quick. Right. So, Wimbledon, they're the league team.
And... Do you mind if I write some Christmas cards? Tell me when you're finished.
I hate you. All right, who's next?
New York Nigel.
Hello, Lucy and Roy Field and Millie Bell and Dumpty Dummers everywhere. It's New York Nigel here. I hope that one of my favourite ways of curing a sleepless night isn't going to be made more complicated. What I do is to think of two Archers characters and figure out the ways in which they're related, and within 2 minutes, I'm off in slumberland. How is Neil related to Brian? Well, Neil's son is Brian's son-in-law. That's an easy one. But how is Bethany related to Adam? That's a bit more complicated and it involves Roy. No need to count sheep. And now, if Roy marries Tracy Horobin, Sicky Susan won't only be the mother-in-law of an Aldridge, Alice. I'll also have to remember that her sister is the stepmother of an Aldridge grandchild, Phoebe. See what I mean? Who needs Ambien? Two other things. He's not dead. He's just in Birmingham. Poor old Mike. Is this the new way we're going to refer to the disappeared in Ambridge? Old Mike, Kathy, Christopher, who else? Jamie, Perks, Rory, Vicky. They're not dead. They're just in Birmingham. And having lived in Birmingham myself, I know there are far worse places to be, but it explains a lot. And finally, I'm feeling sorry for Rob's new neighbours. I'm sure we won't actually hear anything of them at all. My heart goes out to them because I'm a near neighbour of Donald Trump in Midtown New York. And poor old Stormy, the Dumpty dog, has had his normal route to Central Park via the Plaza Fountain disrupted by all the new security barriers and sirens. Some of its favourite smells are now completely out of bounds. And I have to say that Stormy and I are probably happier being Donald's neighbours than we would be living next door to Rob. Loving the podcast, as always, and especially appreciative of those lovely people who've pretended to be actors, but who've kindly volunteered to represent the real people who live in Ambridge. So grateful for their generosity and their insight and their sense of fun, and really grateful to you two as well for being such wonderful interviewers and joining in with all of the great community that they're a part of and we're a part of and everything. It's a really, really nice thing. Hope to call her in again soon, and bye for now.
His game for going to sleep is how are people related to each other in the Archers. That is genius. I try and work out my VAT bill. That's how I get to sleep. But then the shock of it normally wakes me right back up again, so that didn't work either. But this is perfect. But Roy is not going to marry Tracy Horobin. He may be a bit of a smelly old dog or not, depending on your point of view. But he's not mad enough to marry Tracy Horobin. Plus, she's mute at the moment. Mm. And even Roy wouldn't marry a mute woman.
Good enough for Bert Fry, though.
Yes. Well, she's dead now, so that kind of doesn't...
No, but the precedent's been set, is my
that
point.
Super mute, dead.
Talking about games that people play. You kind of were, because you said New York Nigel Howe puts himself to bed.
Okay.
Right. On the...
I guess people's nationalities by their shoes. Is that a thing?
No, it's not a thing. I think that's just peculiar to you.
Oh, okay.
David Keel says he wants to have a World Cup of the Archers. And I think I know how this is supposed to be played, but I'm not going to say, David.
A World Cup of the Archers?
Yes, yes, of Archers characters. Right. And basically, you have a round robin section and then a knockout, and then you see who is the most popular character in the Archers. And he reckons it would be a Lillian and Fallon final.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think...
Jazza. Lillian and Jazza.
Ooh. Third place playoff, maybe. Anyway, David, I think this is a wonderful idea, and it's something we could definitely do over the Christmas period. But I think you need to go and properly explain how this would actually run back on the forum. I think I know what you
mean. David is now staring at his radio aghast, thinking... I didn't have an actual plan. It was just something I thought off the top of my head.
He tweeted it as well. So it's not quite just off the top of his head. He's going for this in his own fashion. You know, he's plastering all of our social media with this. But we need a little bit more meat on them their bones, sir. So I suggest you go back onto the forum, explain how it would work. And then I'll probably give it the thumbs up and we'll go do it.
New York Nigel lives near Donald Trump. Well, there goes the neighbourhood. And his poor dog can't go where he wants to go. I would go and pee all over Donald Trump's front garden. Pee all up his...
Well, he doesn't have a garden. He lives in bloody Trump Tower.
Now I know, but he could pee up the tower. I think it's quite a small dog, though, so it probably wouldn't get very far. J.H. Bennett. I need to read the email. Ooh, I don't know if J.H. Bennett is a man or a woman. Not that it matters. Pip and Jude, he/she sent us a link to the audio of Jude getting away from Pip when he left her at the airport. And JH says, by the way, he was not her lecturer. Dave and Ruth thought that he might be when they first saw him because he was so much older, but he was just an older student at her college who never got it together enough to pass any exams and caused Pip to make a mess of hers. Kind results, JH. Thank you very much, JH. You are completely correct. I'd completely forgotten that. I'm just glad he's gone, quite frankly.
Right.
Oh, and the other message we had was from Jane Roth, who says, thanks to Tractor, I made contact this week with Maya, who is also in the Northeast, and we decided to try and organise a Dumpty Dum meetup in the new year. We set a tentative date of 6 p.m. on Thursday the 12th of January and decided on a venue in Newcastle City Centre. Mm. And she said, can we tell people via the medium of Dumpty Dum if you are in the Newcastle area on the 12th of January and you fancy meeting up, then you need to get in touch with Jane, who is on Tractor.
Awesome. You see the power of Tractor. It's awesome.
I know.
It's fantastic. It's brilliant. Very proud of what we've
it's
achieved
the pulling power
as a community. Well done, you. All right, then, folks, let's have a quick break, come back the other side, touch a Millie Bell, and some hastily put together tweets of the last 7 days. We do have some now, don't we?
Yeah, no. Well,
yeah, no.
I had.
Is
I
it
had...
yes or no?
Yes.
In an uncertain world, there is always music which can be listened to in good company. Welcome to Friday 15, the show where we speak to friends and interesting people to the backdrop of great tunes and allocate 15 minutes to both.
I mean, I was 8 years old, interesting, the same age as the Dragon King's daughter when she comes out of the sea. But what was happening to me when I was 8 years old was that I was at the hands of a paedophile in a classroom for a year. And
awesome. Yeah. For me, and I think the reason that I somehow managed to win in the end is that for me, it's about an economy of the three things that bring a song together.
Catch up with me speaking to friends and interesting people every Friday afternoon on Friday 15, which you can get, of course, from a podcatcher of your choice.
Good day, everyone. Nice busy week on both the forum and Facebook. On the forum, we've been discussing the World Cup of Arches, which was started by David Keel. And Purple Pumpkin started a thread about accents, Brummies in particular. There was a discussion about why people couldn't pin themselves on tractor, and we have a lot of expertise out there to help. And we continue to discuss the psych report, of course. And Cameron Chalmers started a discussion about character names. So pretty busy on the forum. And as I say, if you want to have some fast action, that's a really good place to go. So that would be dumptydum.com/forums. On the Facebook page, we were really busy. First of all, we started to talk about Brian. Brian knows more than Adam about soil, so he can stop Adam continuing with the soil project. But Adam knows enough about soil to improve overfarmed soil on potential property. And we thought, Adam, why aren't you using this as a negotiating point? Andrew Horn pointed out that Brian's softening is flattery to get Adam on board with the project, which is all about building a legacy for Rory. I absolutely agree with you, Andrew. I did wonder whether this was the start of that storyline that we've all been anticipating. And Leslie Greaves pointed out that isn't Brian supposed to be retired? We also wondered in that horrid episode, Jill, what are you doing? Diane Telford said, Jill sounds irrational. She's right, but should be better saying, Pip, he's a twunt. I shall say no more. Don't worry, we will be here for you when you find him hanging out of the back of another woman. Interesting phraseology there, Diane. Yehan Duar said, I hold the same opinion of Toby as Jill, but she's going about it completely the wrong way. She will drive Pip into his arms. If she just left well alone, Pip would soon realise Toby is a complete fool. Yeah, actually, I agree with you. I do think she's going about it the wrong way, but I completely understand why she's losing it. And Glenn Dayafter says, I'm having a hard job believing Jill will do that. She is usually quite sensitive and diplomatic with her family. Much more discussion on that. And I like these debates because I don't have anyone to talk about the Archers with, so I'm glad you got involved in that discussion there. We also said, I hate to say this, but I agree with Susan. It is very unprofessional not to let a client know that you are running late, especially in those circumstances. And I meant the circumstances where everybody's getting dressed up, especially for it. Robin Sutton said, I just knew Kira was going to throw up on that dress. Diane Telford said she had her fingers in her ears. Liza Villalobos said, fortunately, Susan didn't have the four alternative gowns draped over her shoulder. And Pam Cruikshank said, I hoped Kira was going to throw up on that dress and not on Neil's head. We also talked about, Helen, why did you have to say that this will be a Christmas to remember? You're in a soap. It can only go horribly wrong now. And so many of you agree. I'll just read you out a couple. Liz Villalobos says, Cass to the rescue. I foresee Helen's new friend as being another loyal defender with Kirsty, of course. Mm, good point. Maybe I'm being very pessimistic, Liz. You're right. And Witherspoon said, hashtag Archer foreshadowing at its best. And Claire McKeegan suggested that Rob is going to kidnap Henry and Gideon, which I find very frightening. And finally, we said, did we miss something? Elizabeth was very cold with Dr. Locke tonight, and I thought they were pals. Cara Littlewood Poirier said Shula and Elizabeth had a chat about Dr. Locke, and Shula mentioned her foolish crush on him. Elizabeth has cooled things off with him since then. That's true, actually. You're right, and I sort of hadn't joined those dots myself. Janice Pope said it was weird at the start. He said something like, I should let you get on with things, which gave her a chance to get away gracefully, and she said, oh no, Lily said I should relax more. Then, having let him drone on about his first car, she went quite cold and bordered on rude. Do you know what? That's exactly how I felt about it. It didn't feel right, did it? Now, there was a lot more in that vein, but I do have to leave the last word with Vicky Van Gorkum, who said, after hearing about Neville's skills with the ping pong balls, I think she now fancies her chances with him. Oh, you made me laugh. That was so funny, Vicky. Good job. The ping pong balls had to come in somewhere. And Lucy, we are expecting, of course, something in your roundup about the ping pong balls. And it will be much funnier than anything I can think of. So, until next week, don't forget, forum or Facebook. Hooroo!
Right then, Millie Bell, as always, tipped up. Lucy.
Yep.
Hit us with those tweets.
Barefoot Mower. Mm-hmm. Said, I don't care how nice her cakes are, Jill is a malicious old trout. Joni M said, oh good, Jack is on solids. Feed him sprouts on Rob's contact days. That's a nebula. I'm Vincent Murphy said, we don't want any awkward silences, says Brian, a man whose marriage has often contained years of awkward silences. Very true. This is there's a lot to do with baby shit in these tweets. John Porter said, I was once feeding my infant son when he sneezed, vomited and filled his nappy all at the same time. Go for it, Jack. And tweet of the week is from Bob Hawkins, Salvatore Rosa, who said, I always assume with my daughter's boyfriends that they've got an illegal still. My God, hell of a terrifying father-in-law. So there we are.
Right then. End of the showtime, folks. Just rattle through a few things that we just need to say before we say goodbye. Dumdydum.com. Go there. Got shop. Got forum. Tractor. Go on to Tractor. I know a few people are having problems pinning themselves. And I know if you some people can't quite do it on their phones, but then they do it on their iPads. Persevere. If not, there is actually an email address on the Tractor page if you can't quite manage it. You can go email the people at Cornerstone and they'll help you out because they're awesome like that. And they're just like nice people. The whole point is, folks, that you can go on there and then discover who lives relatively close to you, message them and then to kind of hang out with them, have a beer, have a baby sham, have a cocktail, have a fizzy pop together.
And just have a baby then. I was going to, don't have a baby, for God's sake.
Oh, that would be lovely. The first
we are not having any
Tractor baby. Well, why not?
Well, why not? I don't know. I'd feel responsible. Don't do it to please us anyway. If you want a baby, do it yourself. You don't need to do it for us.
Talking about babies, that Arrival thing, I actually watched it, you know, watched it last night. That film where it's the aliens come down, but it's all about language.
Oh.
Yeah, and how we misinterpret people. And it's very good. Very good. And very interesting story about her daughter Hannah through it, which kind of ties the whole thing up. There is a line. She says, shall we make a baby? That's all I'm saying. And it sounds quite innocuous. And it's not one of those rumpy pumpy films. You don't have to worry about seeing heaving buttocks or anything like that. It's very cerebral and it's incredibly middle class. And if you're a bit clever like you and know about language, you quite appreciate it. Because it's not about lasers and shooting people up or anything like that. And presidents all being worried because aliens are about to invade. Not like that at all. It couldn't be further from the truth from that. And stop typing.
Sorry.
Pay attention.
I'm just saving the speech before it the the monologue before it disappears. Mm.
Anyway, so dummydum.com forum.
I can't believe you're shouting at me to pay attention. Bloody hell! I feel clickety click round.
iTunes. It's yes. About time we had some more reviews on there, folks. So it's
we're always
season...
nagging, aren't we? Nag, nag.
No,
send us the
we provide the thing on entertain.
iTunes.
How dare
send
you?
Send us a Dumpty Dum.
How
bloody
dare
hell.
You? Right. No. All we do is we encourage. We gently suggest and encourage. That's all we do.
I don't know. I think we've gone fairly close to mugging on several occasions.
Well, I'll keep the hectoring going. If you'd like to keep our bloody little show on the road, folks, there's two ways this can be done. You can do it by hitting donate on our website. So hit that donate button. Or you can go on to Patreon and you can decide to give us a couple of quid per show. Remember to get in contact with us. You can send us a voice message via SpeakPipe, which is on our website, or you can call us on 0203 031 3105 to leave us a message. On social media, specifically Twitter, where this show came out of, you can find us where we are at dumdydumme. I'm at Royfield. Also, Harriet, the woman of a thousand voices, is at Sambridges.
And I am at Lucy B. Freeman.
Awesome. Would you like to sign off?
Goodbye.
Is that it?
Yep. I'm spent.
But you know, I'm sure that's not true. You're a woman of vim, vigour and brio. I know you've got loads of energy, Lucy. I remember from our teenage years. Age has diminished you not a jot, I'm sure. Age has diminished you not a jot, I'm sure. Age has diminished you not a jot, I'm sure. Age has diminished you not a jot, I'm sure.